Welcome to the Construction Technology News of the Week with Joshua Wayand and Jonathan Marsh. From groundbreaking innovations to industry-shaking updates, this is your Construction Technology News of the Week. Join us with our guest of the week as we dig into the latest news shaping the future of construction.
All right. That was a killer interview. Jonathan, we got to jump into the news here, though. What do you got for me, buddy?
I got DeepSeek. And again, we're finding out that a lot of the things we speculated around DeepSeek are in fact true. So this is ABC News confirming that DeepSeek coding has the capability to transfer user data directly to the Chinese government. Who knew? You know, along with the fact that it costs way more than what the Chinese government said it was going to cost. I know that I always look, when I'm looking for honesty, I look for a large government body from another country that opposes us. That's where I look for my trust. But it's actually a pretty decent article that really walks down through DeepSeek. For anyone out there that doesn't know, the biggest deal with DeepSeek was actually the cost of development and the fact that we had been blocking chips from going to China for a very long time. And that was our strategy. And DeepSeek kind of came out and it said two things. It says, first, your strategy doesn't work because we were able to create something. And then they were, in theory, created it for a lot less money, which I was excited about. I'm now kind of crushed that they couldn't create it for that much because I know how much energy goes into AI. And I'm like, this isn't going to work. If we keep scaling this, we don't have the energy to support this. So it was like, there's a cheaper, low energy way to do this. This is awesome. But unfortunately, it is going to share your information with China. And Jeff, Dick went into some detail on this. It doesn't matter how you try to get around this, correct?
Are you trying to reach the innovators and decision makers in construction technology? Then look no further than sponsoring the ConTech Crew. That's right, we're taking new advertisers. Email us at advertising@theconTechCrew.com to learn more.
If you guys don't know, and you haven't heard about him from us before, Nick Espinosa, Security Fanatics, he's out there all over the social world. So you can just search Nick Espinosa, Security Fanatic, and you'll find him. He even jumped on the bandwagon in the beginning talking about, you know, some of the positives of this, which, John, is truly, I think there is a silver lining in it. Like, this is that balance of hope and optimism and a little bit of skepticism. I'm always falling on that skepticism side, but you know, that if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is, but that actually we can get, there are ways to, and we're actually seeing this here with models here in the US as well. And in others working on, you know, lowering the amount of code and really optimizing that code to drive it down. But there was a hope that we had found it there, but also, like you said, very much need to be careful. Wiped machines that have been taken offline, run the model, wiped and brought back on, have shown themselves to still be sending some sort of information back so there's something deeper going on the surveillance side that you got to be really, really careful of. And I think this brings up some really important pieces for companies to look at as you start to think about AI and you start to think about, you know, how it's going to impact business. You know, it's out there and I'm seeing a lot of people jump to it, but you know, AI, we say this a lot, AI is not a strategy. It is a tool. And you must understand how to use tools before you use them. And how many times have we talked about this? Understand where it was developed. And I think this will be a great segue to bring Josh in, because you know, if you guys didn't listen to the episode on Tuesday with Josh on the interview, go back and listen to it. Fantastic innovator. Fantastic mind around it. And you've played in this world where you're actually helping other companies. And so you don't just think or consume something. You try to learn about the company. You engage with them on what they're building. So I'm interested, Josh, not only on the, you know, on the DeepSeek side and what we're seeing, but also on that relationship side of companies with their technology providers.
Yeah, I mean, I think that especially in a world where our data is actually just our a flavored version of our clients' data, that we have to be unbelievably careful and due diligence into these AI companies of, you know, is this information going to be trained off of? Like, you know, do we need an NDA in place? actually go through those steps to verify that the tools that you're playing with and the tools that you're deploying aren't, you know, being trained off of selling your information, selling your client's information, because it hurts, especially from a litigation standpoint. But at the same time, if you want these tools to be better, they have to be consuming data in some form or fashion. So how, if you're an AI construction startup company out there, do you become better? I mean, do you partner with another contractor and say, hey, like, we'll do X, Y, and Z, but again, we have to have some data to train off? Who wants to be that guinea pig? Nobody. Nobody wants to be that guinea pig. Construction is one of the least documented and digitized industries. So from a machine learning standpoint, there's this deficit around how much knowledge you could possibly be training off of to, again, get to that gold standard, to be able to become the open AI of construction. With public available information, it's going to be unbelievably hard. I'm just going to let everyone know right now. It's just horrible. So what we're seeing is actually a lot of design partnerships. So a lot of, you know, companies willing to be open their doors and willing to be that guinea pig if there is some sort of give and take. I think that, you know, people want to talk about what age this is. We just left the information age. And I would say the age we're in now is the age of just no privacy. I go for a walk. Google tells me, congratulations, you went on a walk. You probably should have went on a couple more this week. If I, you know, open up a tab, again, it knows, again, where I came from, you know, all that, everything now, every single thing you do, the best way I can explain it is no privacy. It doesn't matter if you're using OpenAI. It doesn't matter if you're using Facebook or anything like that. Someone somewhere is now able to know what you're doing from, again, the moment you wake up to, like, you know, again, these smart fridges trying to figure out what products you got inside of them, what time you go to bed, and sleep tracking with these smartwatches. Again, it's almost kind of freaky, right? We're in this era of just, again, no privacy whatsoever. So, you know, honestly, it doesn't really surprise me, again, that information is flowing over that way, even if it is, like, embedded in that way, because, you know, ultimately, all these backdoors exist because of the NSA, right? And so if, again, other governments entities are utilizing these backdoors, that's the fault of the backdoors, not necessarily the people taking advantage of it. I don't want to say hate the player, hate the game, but let's be real. You know, what's happening is unethical. But again, there's so much happening. There's so much data about our daily lives getting bought at market. And the worst part is it's the status quo now. So a long way to say, I don't really know if I have an opinion, because honestly, it's just like so much of my life is probably for sale.
That's because that data is valuable, right? Like, we're leaving dollars everywhere. We're leaving dollars when we get on Facebook. We're leaving dollars when we get here. Like, most software companies, when they come out with something cheap, you know that they're making their money off of the data that you interact with them on. I would say that from a DeepSeek standpoint, they put the, like, they could fund the entire project with the idea that they're going to get data off of us. Again, like you were pointing out, to train or to anything else. And, you know, I think where a lot of our leadership on the data side is going is sort of using anonymized synthetic data. The other option is to do stuff like this, where you're harvesting someone else's data without giving them, you know, compensation for that. And I do feel like the privacy thing is gone only because we don't understand the value of our own data. Our own data has value. And as soon as we can make that into a cultural thing, it won't be privacy. It'll be, you're ripping me off. And, you know, where's my compensation for the data that you stole from me? I did want to bring up with you, Jeff, one more thing on this one in particular. We already know that we're banning chips, and they talk about that a little bit. And, you know, we're looking at things that are made from China because the sophistication of transferring data has got to such a crazy level. But I don't know if anybody has ever looked back at, like, what was it, like the old KGB, who gave some guy like a wooden watch to put on the wall that was like had some little drum inside of it that no one could see, that was actually projecting a radio signal across the street. So, like, the level of sophistication of surveillance is 10x what we seem to think it is. So when China says they have a new AI that's cheaper and it's kind of free and all of this, I mean, that's kind of saying that we want your data. Because, like you said, Jeff, AI is a means to sort of look at data differently. It's not what's important so much as what's inside of it. Just like my brain is very unimportant if I don't have the knowledge that goes with it. You know what I mean? It's a cool looking thing, but doesn't really help anyone.
You know, there is that whole, you know, if the product is free, I'd say if the product is free or cheap, then you're the product.
You're the product.
And I think I'm on record a bunch of times talking about I agree with you, John, that it would be great to see us see that as not a privacy concern, but like you're ripping me off. And then I bet you we could get a whole lot of capitalists to then think a little differently. So who knows? Maybe it's, you know, show you how I'm measured. Show me how I'm measured and I'll show you how I act. I might act a little differently. But to the espionage thing, you know, they found this in transmitters and container ships years ago, like that were foreign made devices inside that were sending information back to the governments. This has been going on forever. The thing about it is we're actually at a level now where the technology is way more sophisticated than we even know. So wild, wild times. It's also, you know, going to be the year, I think, of CMMC and FedRAMP and other. You're going to see that crackdown coming, and you're going to see people really, because like you said, Josh, our data is just a flavor of our clients' data and their clients' data. And ultimately, we got some important clients when we're done in the building in this industry. So because we build just about everything. So a unique one, John, and I love it. It was sort of a double article there. I'm going to jump us over here, though, because the government is not always on the losing end. And this was a big one. If you went to certain websites, the websites were seized. So this is from my boys at Malwarebytes. I love Malwarebytes. Malwarebytes Labs, they have some products and whatnot out there for you. But really, their news has been fantastic for somebody like me who, you know, needs to check in on what's going on and just have that, you know, satiation of my security needs. And this was the U.S. government and a bunch of other government agencies across the world came together and took down. So this was law enforcement from Australia, France, Germany, Greece, Italy, Spain, Romania. They took down some of the largest cybercrime forums in the world. So this website has been seized. Not only did they seize the websites themselves, we've been talking on this show for years about cybercrime as a service. Like, you can actually go get ransomware services. This was a gateway for people who didn't go learn the code that just wanted to be nefarious faster. You know, it was just like, hey, Josh needs a tool for automation. John needs a tool for submittals. We're just going to go up there and grab it. Oh, but this is how we're going to steal people's information. So that one was nulled, 10 million users, and cracked. These were two of the largest cybercrime forums, but also they got their way to the money launderers and then a hosting service called Stark RDP, which was a heavy promotion platform operated and allowed those suspects and those people to host a lot of these things and turned a blind eye. Really interesting in here, in a separate action, the Dutch police and the U.S. Department of Justice dismantled a cybercrime network called the Heart Senders. Not only did they get that, but they also got a bunch of where the money was going. So it's not the end of this operation. So it's really interesting to see a win. We rarely see this, John, a win on the cyber side, on the cybersecurity side, from what I think is awesome to see the government agencies across multiple governments across borders working together on this.
I think this really is, I feel like this is somewhat of a reaction to the ransomware that got kind of out of hand. I mean, no one wants to admit that they have had a ransomware event. So oftentimes it's tough to get like a group of people and say, okay, who's been ransomware in the last 2 years, 3 years? But it's just a surprising amount. So I can see a real desire to sort of at least make this more difficult. Cause like you were saying, they pretty much commoditized cybercrime. Like, you could go on the dark web and for, you know, $15, you can get somebody messed with. And for $500, you can really mess somebody up. And been making criminal actions into commodities. I mean, especially on the data side, as with starting to have more and more value, I feel like they're cutting off the head, which is good. And they're also kind of saying to everybody, we were able to get to the most successful, well, some of the most successful that are out there, you know,
forums. Not the most successful individual hackers, but the forum hackers, the forums that were created. Yeah. I think the interesting thing here too is, you know, to Josh's point that, you know, these are our clients' data. What I also would warn is, you know, this also shows that that data doesn't go away. And so they're actually tracking down. So that person who, you know, you want to be vindictive and you found your way onto the dark web and you want to pay $500 to do something, that can eventually come back to haunt you. So also, you know, some understanding that there can be consequences and data lasts a really long time. So that's an interesting one. Josh, I'm interested because the rise of ransomware, the rise of attacks, it's been proven statistically. Ignite did a study 2 years ago. Haven't seen the updated one, but I know they have one coming this year, that we're 50% more likely in the construction industry to be targeted because, you know, for a multitude of reasons, but not the least of which is the amount of data that we actually have. So I'm interested as an innovator, but also somebody who has a good bridge to the IT world, thoughts on cybercrime and, you know, sort of what's been going on in the world that way.
I was at a conference recently and Dodge Data did a presentation on cybersecurity and talked extensively that in the AEC industry, that the most mature from a cyber perspective was engineers and then architects and then contractors, and then went on to show why contractors are getting hit so much. Because again, they're just not mature from an IT security perspective. A lot of times what we see in IT is that, you know, someone managed to get into an IT position at a construction company and, you know, they stay there for quite a while. And so a lot of, again, these other companies that, again, that are very mature from an IT perspective aren't actually flowing into these companies. And so again, they're pretty antiquated from a cybersecurity perspective. And so that's one issue, again, the antiquation piece, but also again, just, you know, if you are, or were an IT person dealing with cybersecurity at Facebook, you're probably going to have a lot more skill, a lot more cybersecurity than a mid-sized contractor. So also talent being a big thing too. Construction may not be your first place that in mind as you're graduating with an IT skill set. So there's a deficit for skills and people willing to make an impact in the IT perspective. The one thing though, I mean, I do, you know, ransomwares are obviously a big problem, but, you know, I would say that one thing I would love to, again, see tackled or addressed in the next couple of years is actually just impersonation attacks. I think those are going to take over in such a much larger way than ransomware ever was. It's voice modulation, again, cameras, deep faking, language models to impersonate writing styles. Again, this is all happening. And again, with construction having such a large aged workforce, we are the most susceptible for a lot of these things, right? So, you know, it's not the obvious text message you get where you're like, okay, that was clearly someone that was not, you know, the United States Postal Service claiming to be the United States Postal Service. Again, it's people claiming to be your boss and claiming to be your CEO. And again, it's already happened that companies are losing millions of dollars to this, way more. Again, the market for impersonation attacks is massive in comparison to ransomware ever was. So that's where my mind's focused on. I would love to kind of see that being tackled next.
I love that because I was having this discussion with a cybersecurity professional recently, and, you know, about automating cybersecurity and that it's, you know, it's not really a people problem because you got to remove the people. And I said, that used to be true, but really it's with these new things, it's process and it's the ability to, you know, in that deep fake from a process perspective to understand on both sides that I'm going to hang up that phone and I'm actually going to pick up another phone and call and confirm that the routing number changed, that this vendor changed, that this happened. There, you know, to your, you know, guys, go back to the episode, but this whole process idea, process is a part of being more secure, is understanding and creating checks and balances inside of your processes that can't be faked by that. Also, I do hope, you know, and we were having this off camera discussion sort of about AI and our ability to recognize it at this point. I do think that not only our ability to recognize it is going to continue to increase so that we'll notice those more and more, but also I think the tooling can be, it can pick it up. So, you know, your Copilot, the best thing Copilot can do is pop up and say, this was probably written by AI. Is it a marketing email or is it a scam? Because if it's, you know, if they're asking you for money, you should kill it. If it's, you know, they're trying to market to you, your decision if you want to read the crap or not, up to you. So I like all of that in the process because it is going to get worse, man. And on a segue, I'm going to go into my next article here in a second, but I love that you talked about that, Josh, because we are really at a pivotal moment in the construction industry where we need to go outside, and the most successful IT organizations inside of our industry have gone outside of our industry to others that have gone through these transformations and security hardenings, like fintech, prop tech, some other areas, you know, media, to really bring them in. Because to be an IT person in this world, you get to feel like you built a few things, and you get exposed to some of the most cool people and processes and projects on the planet. So it is a great opportunity, but it is a skill set we need to recruit for. And this is what gets interesting, because my next article talks about the business technology outlook for 2025, talking to IT leaders. Where will you be aiming in the next year? Where will you be spending your money? The number one is tech talent equation. How are we going to solve our tech talent problem? How am I going to get enough talent into my doors to work on the problems that I have and work for my company? So you're going to have to lean against, you know, you're going to be fighting the Googles. You're going to be fighting the Facebooks. You're going to be fighting these other software companies, these big companies, for the talent. So you're going to have to sell them something else. And I think the ability to impact the built world is one of the biggest things we should be selling and impacting those people that build around us, because it's a cool opportunity. And then interestingly here, the other thing they bring up is, are we going to see a private going back to privatization of the cloud? In other words, moving off of public clouds and back into private clouds because of the rising costs and the competition in the AI space, with how hungry generative AI is for space and compute in the public cloud. It's driving up the prices because, quite frankly, they can charge it. So are we going to see a shift back to the private cloud? And I know a bunch of folks in the industry that are really interested in that process. And then finally, there's this experimentation with, and I'm going to need a little help here from you, Jonathan, maybe on this, but agentic AI. So this ability to create agents, it's an interesting dilemma where it's not like you're going to have this huge AI. You're going to be building your own AI agents in some way, shape, or form. And so that creates a lot of risk and sprawl and interesting opportunities. So I just set a mouthful to everybody listening. John, you can start where you want in that, whether you want to start at the tech talent acquisition, the private cloud, or the agentic AI.
I think the tech talent acquisition is probably the first one to hit, because that's the one where we're really struggling. I think I even asked Josh, like, where do you look for the people that are going to do your job? And tech talent also is going to be different, because we have like the best encyclopedia in AI that we've ever had. So I can pull off what I would like little tech tricks that would never be possible without this instant access to deep levels of technology details. So I actually feel like there's a new profile of a technology leader that's going to come out of AI that is somebody that's a little bit more social, a little bit more interactive, that understands how to learn quickly and is able to attack these. So that doesn't necessarily, you know, I mean, I always found my VDC people and graphic designers, because graphic designers understand 3D space. So it's like, what are we trying to understand with our IT people? And if it's, we're trying to understand our workforce, and we can use AI to deal with some of the background educational requirements of IT staff, I think that we're looking at different people. We're looking at maybe a fundamental change to the type of people you're looking at to bring IT into your company. And that might be the silver lining of all this, is just that AI gives a force multiplier on the technical side to allow us to use less technical staff to go a bit further. So I really feel like that's like, you know, Google, I don't think is going to work that way. So we're not competing with the big guys on this. This would be a small guy's thing. And in construction, like IT in construction is, we were talking about security. I had an IT security expert out to one of my job sites, and we just started laughing, because he's like, I can't secure this. He's like, look at this job site. I think we've called it a wicked environment a lot. This is a wicked environment. You can't secure it. There aren't even good patterns on this damn job site. So like trying for construction to get to the point where we can feel really comfortable about the security that we have out there. And it's going to be a big lift. But what do you think, Jeff? Do you think there's maybe room for a different type of IT personnel now that we can sort of, I mean, you've experienced it, I've experienced it. I'm a poor Python programmer, but my gosh, I have hundreds of scripts now. I run scripts for everything now.
Okay, we're going to get into the nuance here. And again, this is what it's been really fun over the last year. And then, you know, if you guys heard the episode last week of the MEP Innovation episode a couple weeks ago, I've gotten to dig into this. You're talking about two divergent things here. You have the operational technology and the true IT technology. But I actually think this is an opportunity for us to understand and create, just like we do with our apprenticeship programs, to lean on the really well IT trained. And when I say that, I mean the plumbing of IT, networking, security, connectivity, hardening, patching, you know, mobile device management, that kind of thing. We have an opportunity to train people. You know, if we have good leadership, we can train the future leaders in that area. We can continue to grow skill sets. We can create training programs where we can recruit those kids that show up that, hey, they came our way because they're coming in a non-traditional path, but here's a traditional IT perspective. You know, I met a parent at a back to school night last year, 2 years ago, and he was pivoting from what he was doing into cybersecurity and, you know, taking time to go back to school. I'm like, well, why can't we make that part of our programming if we've got people coming out of trades programs to learn things like that? And then, John, there's what you're talking about, operational technology, and really looking for those black swans and preparing us for the future, preparing us for, you know, times when we have less and less people and we have more and more robotics and AI and things to help us in that process. So two different things, but I think they both can be trained on and we can provide paths to grow. And I think it's the only way we can beat some of the other industries that are already established is we can give you a career path that leads to more. And that then serves us. So, Josh, we went over a lot there. What do you think?
John, where your head's at is exactly where my head's at operationally in the next 2 years. I fully believe, and again, I hope someone actually, like, you know, snips this and calls me out in 2 years from now, that there will be an actual job where there's probably one or two project managers. And instead of, again, a large like field office suite, you're going to have a scheduling agent, you're going to have an estimating agent, and you're going to have a procurement agent, you're going to have a submittal, an RFI agent. And again, that agent is got maybe a progress tracking agent, and that project manager is going to be managing a suite of AI agents. And again, the superintendents will be out there doing that actual document collection as well as their managing process. I really do believe it. And the reason why I say that is because when you think about, again, the scales of automation, robotics are going to take so long. They're going to take so long to truly, truly automate the field. But agents, again, doing the actual day-to-day work in software and, again, P6 and all those other types of softwares, they can do that in scale across the economy overnight. So that's why, again, I fully believe into that. And so, and more importantly, as soon as these AI agents can start talking to each other in a natural language, you could start having your own weekly huddle with all these agents, and they can all start facilitating information back and forth. The APIs are all connecting, all the data is talking. So again, it would be so much more efficient. Going back to our you know, conversation on Tuesday, I think that again, companies are not like focused on that world. They're not like preparing themselves for that world in a big way. And the reason why I say that is because if you look at again, a lot of the tools out on the market right now, they are focused on, again, like just solving like points. They're, you know, they're trying to solve that one thing and that one other thing. Where agents can really, really start to focus on is not only getting the same depth as a point solution, but also providing the same level of width as some of these larger platforms. And so they're going to be able to start doing a lot more work, be able to do, again, the role of a person. I hate saying it, but the role of a person for, again, a much cheaper cost. And because we work in what is often considered a low bid industry, you're almost going to have to, from an economic survival of the fittest standpoint, if your competitors are beating you out because their GCGRs are lower because they're utilizing agents, you're going to have to start deploying these. And if you do not have the knowledge and the know-how, and again, to y'all's point about people in IT who are willing to train other people to be, you know, like leaders of AI management, maybe that's the role, project managers of the future, then again, you're setting them up for failure. And I really do believe that.
There are these, like using the agents to do certain things doesn't actually take away the skills of, say, creating the overall schedule and working on that. Yeah, it'll help design it, like generative design can help, but it's going to take those people, right? And so what we're saying, I think, is that we're going to use people for what they're more intended for. And we should be losing the overhead of interns, or I don't want to call them, we called them PEs, project engineers. Like these were below everybody, ran around with the iPad or ran around putting typing things in on the job site to get it in. It's removing all of those and giving that superpower of having an assistant for all of those things to these project managers, to these superintendents who are then focused on running work, organizing and making sure that the problems that an agent can't deal with are dealt with, and keeping their heads up on a job and not down in it. John, thoughts?
The first agent that I dealt with was AutoGTP back when GTP first came out. MIT immediately turned it into an agent that could talk to itself. This was like years and years ago before they had decided to call them agents. And I've been looking at the agents primarily as a collection of learning models. So I've been looking around, what are the learning models? Oh, you can do sentiment analysis, and you can do voice to text and text analysis. You can do image to text. You can do image to image. Like there's all these attributes that build up these agents. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see where all that evolves to. But my biggest thing with the agent, and it's with AI also, is necessary effort for building in general. There's a level of necessary effort, things that we should do that take effort, that teach us or make us think or cause us to do advanced reasoning because we were running up against something. So as we remove these, we can run into a problem where we now have a processor, an agent that's dealing with all our problems within a box. And if they're going to actually get creative, yes, we can give them some level of latitude to move between things, but we do have to restrict it. And we do have to look really hard at our workforce and say, what's necessary effort? What should you actually have to grunt through because you're going to learn how to do something? And if you don't, it's going to make my business too fragile. I'm working with my son on stuff and I can just give him huge, huge masses of knowledge through the AI, but he's not learning that. There's no necessary effort for that. So I think as we get moving forward and the agents start to work in, because I totally agree with you, Josh, it's across the board, there should be agents for almost everything. I think as leadership and as sort of the visionaries, we have to look, what's the things that require necessary effort? Meaning the effort that's put in has a value in and of itself. And if you remove that effort, you're actually removing value rather than just automating a system. And, you know, we run into it in fab all the time. Like you can over-optimize to the point where that person can't keep up with welding because we can optimize everything around them. And now there's a limit. So, you know, I think a big part of this is looking at how do we decide what agents do and what they don't do to make sure that we're not making ourselves real fragile or we're not dismissing the effort that's necessary to be a good company.
There you go, Jonathan. I'm going to leave you on that one. Wow, this was a lot of fun. Who knew we were going to get that deep? By the way, that was from CIO Dive, ciodive.com. One of my favorites to check in on. You can search it, but I'll also have it in the show notes and I'll share it out with you guys as we do with all of our news stories. So Josh, thanks for sitting down for the news, man. Sticking through it with us.
Excited to be here and yeah, thanks for having me. It's been awesome.
Jonathan Marsh, it's always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you for sitting down with me today, man.
Thanks for having me, man.
And thank you for tuning in today to geek out for the construction technology news of the week with Joshua Wayan and Jonathan Marsh. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to this show, visit thecontechcrew.com. This is the Contech Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.